This is Ozarks at Large, practically our entire day, from how we wake up, to how we eat, to how we travel, to how we relax, is based on centuries or millennia of invention. Chaim Goodman Strauss, a mathematics professor at the University of Arkansas, will explore some of the building blocks of civilization in a University of Arkansas Honors College signature seminar next fall, and in a preview public lecture Wednesday evening at 5:15 in Gerhard Hall Auditorium on the U of A campus. The course is called Little Things That Change the World. And a picture that accompanies the course announcement includes several small items like a six-sided die and a salt shaker. We invited Chaim to come to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio recently to give us some examples of some of the items he'll discuss. He says this course is years in the making.
Well, I've been thinking about this for, 20-plus years, perhaps. And it was only sort of when I began to prepare for the course that I remembered, or actually stumbled across, an article that I absolutely must have read, which was from the 1999 Science Times in the New York Times on the string revolution.
Not string theory.
No, the string revolution. So string is an example. It's like, when's the last time you really thought about much about string, you know?
And how important it is.
But it's not just string. I mean, if you think about what the string revolution gave us, it's like rope, thread, needle, cloth, clothes.
Shoelaces.
Nets, snares, lines, bags, straps, handles.
Bungee cords.
Fancy hats. Embroidery.
Yarn.
Beadwork. And so all of this was something that had to be developed and had to be thought out over tens of millennia by – here's something really kind of amazing that is only a fairly recent discovery. I guess this artifact had been discovered quite a long time ago, but like many things, it had to be seen for the first time and only sort of understood what it was. 44,000 years ago, somebody made a rope-making machine. Not really a machine. It's just simply a piece of bone with three spirally holes in it. But it's exactly the same way the rope was made up until, I guess, the mid-20th century, basically, 44,000 years ago. And already at that time, it was a pretty sophisticated – I mean, the holes are actually got little spiral grooves. Just imagine trying to make that.
So the basis here is – without string, a lot of tasks would be much more difficult.
Or impossible.
I'm guessing that so many of the items that you might talk about in this seminar are things that when they were first either invented, discovered, modified, the person who was doing it perhaps out of necessity.
Absolutely.
With no idea.
Absolutely right.
That thousands or tens of thousands of years later
it
would be.
Of course, yeah. So, we're all acting in sort of our most immediate interest, right? And it's hard to see how could anybody foresee the consequences of, all the way down to, say, B-52 bombers or
right.
Nuclear energy or
so is
space program.
Some of these items are so basic, it would be impossible to deconstruct just when they came in to being.
Maybe.
Or no.
So lots of this stuff actually is known when at least some things were invented. You know, I mentioned that the string – that this book was called Women's Work the First 20,000 Years. One thing about paleontology, particularly the older aspects of these inventions, is at any particular time, any particular discovery, you know it's not the very oldest example, right? Mm. So these dates always tend to get pushed further and further back. And the more recent things, though, some of them can be identified pretty clearly exactly when they were invented. So on the sheet, for example, is the button.
Sure.
Which is a favorite example because it was invented several hundred years after the buttonhole.
So the buttonhole came first.
Yeah.
I'm guessing it wasn't called buttonhole at the time.
I guess it wasn't. I don't know. Isn't that cool?
That is. So what, something like a twig or something used first?
Yeah, you've seen it. Like you put a little – you have a little loop of string.
Sure.
And you push a peg through.
It's like what Paddington Bear – on his coat uses that. So the button came later. Do we know how much later someone finally thought about the button?
Well, you're putting me on the spot. The book that there's this fantastic book called The Ancient Engineers by L. Sprague de Camp, who is a well-known science fiction writer. He wrote almost as many books as Isaac Asimov and as many on a broad set of topics. And that's where I got that fact.
Okay.
But I've kind of forgotten the date.
Okay. Okay. So let's go to this collage of some of the things that are small but have changed our lives. Now, some of these on here I don't think are that small, like eyeglasses.
I mean, that makes sense to me. I mean, that was a revolutionary change.
Well, we're in middle age, and we know how helpless
we
would be. I don't know if you wore glasses before, but I certainly know the change, and it was but we were useless after a certain age for small, fine work.
Or useless or prey, for that matter.
Right. So, that would be a good example. But, you know, I guess the glass was first mass-produced in about the first century A.D. in Syria. And I guess before that, but certainly after that, people began to notice that, you know, spherical blobs of glass were – could magnify, and ultimately over the next 1,000 years, those became lenses and then eyeglasses, right? So one can actually trace very well the history of these artifacts.
The key. I mean, we all use keys. I mean, I suppose some people now have keyless cars or doors entry, but the key for I don't know how long has been important, everything from your house to your car to a trunk, to a safe deposit box.
So I have to admit, some of these are sort of meant to be metaphorical for a broader thing. So yes, you're absolutely right. And there's a whole history there, and it's fascinating to look at old keys, which look impossibly clunky. And of course, there's been a sort of a race between people cracking keys and people developing keys all along. But actually, I was thinking that in terms of privacy, the innovation of that we have increasingly large amounts of personal space, and that our sense of personal space today is, you know, it's extremely recent, right? That we would actually have a room of our own or a space of our own or a place to hide out and not have, you know, 40 people packed into one room with all the things that people do, except I guess the outhouse would be not quite all the things that people do, but taking place in that one space.
So that's interesting. Some of the small things are more abstract or ephemeral than just string or a button.
I view all of this stuff as a metaphor for opening up a discussion, broader discussion. So, for example, the chili pepper is on there, and chilies are pretty interesting in their own right. But it's also amazing. It's an amazing representation of how the new and the old worlds met and collided and formed something new, right? That the chili pepper is, of course, a new world crop, and within just a few decades became integral to, like, cuisines all over the world, right? Basically, pick at random, and you're almost certain to certainly chilies are important there. So,
well, you can even get a little bit more basic or a little bit more universal: salt, pepper, spices.
Right.
I mean, what they've become.
So we'll be reading the book Salt by Mark Kalansky. Salt, of course, was critically important for food preservation, and so is interesting in that way. But things like salt and pepper, of course, pepper is all about the global trade. You know, it was tremendously expensive in Europe up until, you know, sometime the 17th century or so. And but I actually have on this sheet the salt and pepper shaker, which I think is kind of interesting too, because it's not just the salt and the pepper, but the fact that you would actually have these industrial objects on your table as a sign of just sort of standard middle class life, right? Mm. That everybody, that millions of people could afford these objects and, you know, the stuff to put in it, in it itself is pretty interesting, right? So that leads us to a discussion of the broadening middle class and the rise of the industrial world and so on. So
what's interesting about considering all of these items is how they have to add up. And we get somewhere that individually these items might not have gone. But now our lives are perhaps safer, more sanitary, better because of something created or modified by someone we may not know about.
That's right. This is I guess the ultimate theme of the course is that this is a gigantic collective enterprise that no human ever has or could exist apart from other humans, and that millions of minds have contributed to our well-being. In fact, could we just do a little exercise with the listeners?
Sure.
So this is how we're going to begin the course, and I think it's to me, it's immensely humbling and a powerful exercise to think about. Just at this moment, just reach out and just touch whatever surface or thing is near you. It may be the tabletop or your steering wheel or your coat or essentially anything. And just think for a moment of how many people were involved, not just in manufacturing that or shipping it to you or developing it, but then the entire history that is behind all of those things. It's like it's staggering to try to contemplate. It has to be millions upon millions of people that have pushed forward individually on every aspect of this, that this is some sort of gigantic collective enterprise that we've been engaged in together for tens of thousands of years. It's amazing. It's just overwhelming, really.
It's humbling.
It's humbling, and that ultimately is the true point of this course. Even the haircut is kind of an amazing thing.
Tell me about the haircut.
Yeah, so the haircut so I, of course, as one student sort of rather snarkily remarked, I'm not exactly an expert on the haircut, which I thought was a rather rude comment. But
for our listeners, because you don't perhaps have as much hair as other people.
No, I think you meant because what hair I have is a little unruly.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's really kind of astonishing that just as animals, right, that we evolved over hundreds of thousands of years to have this really bizarre stuff on the top of our heads that requires the active intervention of other humans with tools to manipulate and shape in this kind of way that's a cultural marker that signifies both our status within a group and our belonging to a group in opposition to other groups, right? Haircuts, it's a powerful, contentious thing, right?
Yeah.
What somebody's hair is. Nothing could be more personal and nothing could be more of a signifier of who you are. But yet, like, how did this happen? I mean, it's astonishing. What other creature has a feature that requires the active intervention of other creatures in the kind of a cultural manner? And if you don't, somebody whose hair is not managed, of course, looks like a crazy person or a wild person.
Or right? God forbid you're a woman running for public office and your hair doesn't look exactly like someone thinks it should.
Or really, I think a man, maybe.
Yeah,
Ernie's hair is pretty unruly, but.
Yeah. I would, you know, argue that a woman has, unfortunately, more attention than
right.
a man.
But one interesting thing is, so one thing that we'll be reading is an excerpt from Charlemagne's Mustache, which is actually about beards and power in the medieval ages.
I know that you said some of these pictures in the collage that you've provided are metaphorical or a launching pad for further discussions. But I do want to ask about one more that's on here, and that's the six-sided die.
Yeah. So that'd be metaphorical.
Yeah.
I was using that as a way to open up a discussion of the quantification of risk.
Mm.
Which is pretty interesting. So people have been gambling for millennia, and it was in the 17th century that the mathematical foundations of probability and statistics began to be formed. And it was really in the context of, you know, in those days, a scientific mind needed a rich patron, often nobility, often in debt from gambling or others in debt to that person for gambling. So it's a kind of, you know, very practical importance to the patrons and a good way to launch into this fascinating subject. So the quantification of risk really was a big step forward, and it really did start with six-sided dice being thrown around or cards being played. Some of the first really key questions came from the following question. If you are playing, say, a game of chance like craps or something, and then somebody's ahead a certain amount. Say you're playing best 5 out of 7.
5 out of 9.
5 out of 9.
Okay.
But the game stops when you're ahead by 3. How do you evaluate sort of what a fair payout would have been? What's the expectation of where you'd be from there on? So.
But I can see this used for insurance or actuary tables or things like that.
Absolutely. So risk analysis is a foundation of modern society, like all of these other things, coming from something as simple as a dice.
Ever since I realized we were going to be having this conversation ahead of your public lecture and ahead of the seminar, the honors signature seminar that you'll teach in the fall, I've been thinking about what contemporary things we might be underestimating
for
the future. And what I kept coming back to was the drive-through speaker.
The drive-through speaker.
Because it seems so banal and so utilitarian. But just think how much easier, for better or worse, it's been to get fast food through a window or that six-pack of beer without having to get out of the car.
Well, the beautiful thing about this sort of perspective, right, is that you can expand the drive-through speaker into any kind of convenience of that sort, where it makes us sort of less and less having to go out and do something in the real world.
Chaim, thanks so much for coming in.
Chaim Goodman-Strauss is a mathematics professor at the University of Arkansas and will lead an Honors College signature seminar in the fall called Little Things That Change the World. He'll give a free public preview lecture Wednesday at 5:15 p.m. in Gerhard Hall Auditorium on the University of Arkansas campus.